Good evening, and welcome to A Feminist Perspective. I am Linda Jones, Assistant Dean of Women at KU, and I will be moderating tonight's program, Women in Art. A Feminist Perspective is sponsored by the Women's Resource and Career Planning Center, located in the Dean of Women's Office, 222 Strong Hall. Our telephone number is 864-3552. I hope that through this program you can become familiar with some of the many resources available to you through our office. We are concerned with anything that concerns women and have gathered people and materials to help you with questions ranging from career planning and academic counseling to legal rights and current legislation to medical services for women. I hope that you will call or come by soon so we can find out what's on your mind and what kind of services you need. The goal of this program is to provide a forum for women themselves to speak publicly on issues of concern to them and help inform other women and men of the movement which is remaking the shape and substance of women's and men's lives. The topic for discussion tonight is women in art. The women who are here with us are Peggy Baldwin, Staff Director of Hashinger Resident Theater and Actress, Marcia Paladin, Teacher and Dancer, and Herta Galton, Painter. This program is being pre-recorded, so tonight we will not be able to respond to telephone calls. The topic for us tonight is Women in Art. I think we'll start the discussion by talking about focusing your attention is an integral part of being an artist. This has not been culturally encouraged for women in the past. Rather, the role of wife and mother has been in the forefront. How do you feel that this has affected your own personal growth as an artist? Peggy?
I think I came at this from a very different point of view, and that was that I knew very young what I wanted to do, and I was encouraged right from the beginning. I think when I saw my first movie, I had decided I wanted to be an actress, and I never changed my mind. And I was encouraged most of my life to go ahead and do this. And so I knew what I wanted to do. When I left high school, I went to New York and went to a drama school and worked in the theater for 7 years. And I had sort of a reverse process because then, after 7 years of a career and becoming extremely tired from the process of the competitiveness especially, then I married and had children. And then I encountered the diffusion of focus. I had been so totally focused and so absorbed and involved and dedicated. I found it a very, very difficult adjustment. The way I concentrated was so focused and so, I guess the circle of focus was so intense that to broaden it to include a husband and then children was almost excruciating and very, very traumatic. And yet I think it's been a very valuable process because it's helped me to, I've grown in very different ways. But I don't think that it's been easy at all. Mm-hmm. I guess the process has been similar for you or not?
Yes, Marcia. It really has. It's amazing. I too was encouraged right from the very beginning to do what I wanted to do. I started dance training when I was very young. And I wanted to be an actress, too.
Did you?
Yes. After I saw my first musical comedy, I came home and day after day traced around in costumes and played puppet theaters behind the sofa and so on. And then I went to Occidental College and decided that movement was really the thing that I wanted to go into. Then I met my husband, and we married when I graduated, and we went right into graduate school at the University of Illinois, both of us. So there wasn't any break there. Mm. We were both students. I was teaching. I was a teaching fellow there. And it was then that I really started focusing mm-hmm. as an artist. Mm-hmm. The rest, the early part of it was just really just playing around. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any training or any focusing really, but it was playing around. Then I got to Illinois and I started really devoting my attention to the art. And for 6 years, I did exactly what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. Then we moved here, and it was a real shock. It was a real shock because I left Illinois pregnant, came here, and had my first child, and that first year was really grim.
I
have real guilt feelings now about mm-hmm. it because I lost out that first year of my child's mm-hmm. my first child's life. Mm-hmm. You can't cry over spilt babies or whatever. But it's come up again in my life now because I have a new baby and I'm thoroughly enjoying her. And I think, why couldn't I have enjoyed that first baby? As it's turned out, I wouldn't trade it for anything, the life and the fact that I've grown, as you say you have, Peggy, through it all. But I kept thinking, why didn't my mother tell me okay, go ahead and focus. But when you have children, it's going to be, there's going to be an adjustment. I wasn't warned, and I wish now I had been, because if I had been prepared.
You wouldn't have believed it.
Well, maybe not.
Even if she told you.
What is your mother's kind?
Did your mother tell you?
My mother didn't tell me these things. I had a very different experience, because my whole life was so very different, because I was discouraged as a child. I always wanted to paint, and that was the most dreadful thing one could do. I was discouraged all the time. And I made a sort of compromise with my mother to become a fashion designer instead of an artist. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was all the years till... the war broke out, you know, I had to emigrate. Lots of things happened that have nothing to do really with what we're talking about. I emigrated to England and I got married. I had children and I forgot completely about what I wanted. I didn't forget. I would say I wasn't too happy, but we were very much concerned with staying alive during mm-hmm. the war years in England. We didn't think of art much. Mm. And then we went back to Vienna, and I started, my children went to school, I had much more time on my hand, and then I started to think of what I really wanted to do with my life. And I went to a painting school, and then to the academy in Vienna, and I started to study really seriously. And then I had all these problems you're having, you see, because it is very, very difficult to keep a household going the same way you kept it going all these years, to be a mother the same way you were all the time, and to be a wife.
It's not possible.
We're in the same boat.
And it's I would say it's impossible. I'm very happy with what has happened in my life, with everything that was unhappy in it too, because it helped me grow, and I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing today but for that. But now I'm really beginning to enjoy life. I'm really growing up the first time, being responsible for myself, and I'm very happy that way.
And doing what you really
doing
wanted
what
to do.
I always wanted to do.
Tell Marcia what you told me yesterday about painting.
That you have to learn to paint. Is that what you mean?
No, I was at her house yesterday and saw her paintings for the first time. And what you said about, you know, you wish you had all these arms and hands.
Oh, yes, I have so many ideas that I wish I could paint continuously day and night, and I do some.
And she had six hands, so she could paint all at once. And she
just use your children.
And her paintings now, they just exude all that vitality and that vibrance and that aliveness that just says, you know, I'm just so happy and alive doing what I'm doing. It just leaps out of the paintings at you. You know, it's just, it's really exciting.
This is the first time that I really feel I'm doing what I wanted to do in painting too, not only in my life.
Well, this, to me, this brings up a question about the different sets of experiences which each of you have had, and from what you have said about Herta's paintings, that this does come out and that you are expressing this. Do you feel that, Marcia and Peggy, that you are expressing some parts of you, that your role of a woman has given you different experiences, and that as a part of your art you are expressing them?
I feel that way. I think right now all of the tendency is not to differentiate between men and women and what they bring to any given thing, but to say that we all have the potential for a wholeness. And I think in theory I agree with that, but I think we aren't at that state of wholeness yet. And I feel very much that that I bring something different to my art. I express something different. That's not saying that a man couldn't do the same thing, but let's see, as an actress I wasn't able to see myself, you know, very well because I was involved in a production. Now, since I've been directing and I've done several shows, I have begun to see a style emerge, and I can sit outside and watch it. And
your style?
My style, yes. And also, as I've articulated what I want to convey, I'm beginning to feel that it really, I think, has a feminine focus, in that I'm primarily interested in theater that involves people. That means it's a meaningful and involving emotional experience for not only the cast but for the audience. And I'm not really very interested in just intellectual theater. I'm interested in that which touches people most deeply. And I've been kind of curious as to whether this, I'm sure that men would say that they also feel this way, and yet I have a feeling that my directing and my kind of theater is much more emotional than most men might arrive at. And
about Grotowski.
Well, yes. Now, I realize that that's very valid, and I guess I have to say, maybe it's American culture that I'm talking about, and maybe I'm not talking about professional either. Maybe I'm just talking about what I've experienced, let's say, on a less professional level. I know this is open to a lot of question, and yet I have a feeling, I wonder if the experience of being a woman doesn't get you in touch with a level of humanity, of a feeling level, of experience, of sensitivity, an empathy, and again, I don't know. I don't think that this has to, that men are excluded from this, but somehow, by virtue of our particular position in society and some sort of conditioning, I wonder if we haven't develop these resources a little bit more highly than men have. And I think, you know, they've developed other aspects of themselves, and now we're trying to interchange the two and both grow from each other's experience. Does that make any sense in your experience?
I can go along with that. I've never thought about that question.
Yeah, I just don't see why all these all that shouldn't be possible for a man to experience too.
Oh, I think it is.
And I just think this is the way boys are brought up, to not to experience some of these feelings.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's what Peggy's saying.
I'm not disagreeing with Peggy. Right. I'm just wondering why it should be that way.
And for the man, well, for us, for instance, going out and earning a living and having to deal with the pressures and responsibilities of keeping a job going, or you know, like in the theater here, there are administrative responsibilities and there are human relations things that come up. And I must say, after not having worked professionally for about 7 years and then now going back, I'm much more sympathetic with the pressures that I know Don has been experiencing. I had a tendency to forget them, you know, in those 5 years or 7 years. And I think we've all suffered one way or another. I mean, women have suffered from lack of exposure, lack of having to perform, as it were, in the world, and lack of having to accept responsibilities and all. And men, in some ways, have had to perform so much that they haven't had a chance to develop those more, what, quiet, delicate sensitivities, you know, that I think are really, and I think both of them are really important for the wholeness that we all need as human beings. Yeah. I've talked too much. You go ahead.
What you said reminds me of a friend the other day expressed the opinion that it was completely impossible for her to accept a man as a ballet dancer.
As a ballet dancer. Mm-hmm.
And I just can't understand this point of view. Or men say, I don't understand anything about art. I leave that to my wife.
Do you feel this is changing at all because of the women's movement? Or do you think it is still much more socially acceptable for the woman of a couple or the woman in society to have the feminine characteristics involved with appreciating music and art?
I think it's very much that way.
That's
and I think it's much more in this country than anywhere else in the world.
This reminds me of an article my husband was reading in the Psychology Today. I don't get time to read them. Saturday Review, maybe, but I think those things. I'm too busy reading my own stuff. Anyway, it was about some sort of test that they had done with men and women judging painters' work. And I think did you see that study? Mm-hmm. One of the control groups, I really can't remember exactly what it was, but there was a control group and another group. And one of the groups was told that it was a woman painter or a male.
Oh.
And the other group wasn't. And, of course, the judgment was which is better or which should win the prize. And the men artists were the ones that pretty nearly won, judging, men and women judging. The women thought that the men should win, and the men thought that the men should win. So that sort of turns the tables, though, because Phil said, well, why would that be?
Well, if a man does something, you see, then it must be good, because men are always earning the money, so it must be good. You see, it's always a matter of a little bit of money.
That's what the only thing I could think of.
This brings up the whole question of competition in the arts. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that women primarily compete against women? As in the article you're saying, when you have a woman and a man competing, the man comes out ahead in this particular study. In the theater or in dance or even in painting, do you feel that this recognition is given because the man is a man or because of a value judgment of his creative talent?
I think officially it's always the men who are much more important in, say, teaching, you know, prizes, exhibition, this kind of thing. But when it comes to selling, I don't think it matters really very much, because somebody has to like a painting and they don't care who painted it, really. Mm-hmm. Unless it is somebody very famous, you know. Mm-hmm.
What about in dance?
It's really funny because today, probably always, there have been more women involved professionally than men. Mm-hmm. So that the men hold a very, very special position. In New York today, there are mostly the male choreographers, Merce Cunningham and Alan Nicolai and Paul Taylor and so on, who are recognized. And now there's an underground, well, it's not so much underground anymore, but more young people, women, are becoming involved in more experimental kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But the real established dancers, choreographers, artists are men.
Hmm. Whereas the actual performers have
traditionally. There are more women performers than men. Mm-hmm. But the artists are men.
Do you think it has something to do with that men really spend all their time and all their life in it, and do other things besides
that? Of course. So my friends who've gone to New York, that's what their focus is. Mm-hmm. But I think that must have something to do with it.
Well, I wonder if it isn't something to do with the choreographer originates, he creates it, and then therefore he is the director of the direction of that. Yeah, right. No, I'm using your example of the male choreographer. Mm-hmm. You know, therefore he is in control of what is created and what evolves, and the woman performs it. And so he still is in charge.
But aren't there women in other words, choreographers?
Well, it's the same way with directors, though. Most of the directors in the theater are men. And this seems to be the prerogative, you know, of the male to it's again leading, and mm-hmm. women can perform. Mm-hmm. But to break through that and allow women to originate, to create, to lead.
Historically,
it's a though,
interesting in dance, in 1900 when Isadora started with Isadora and Ruth St. Denis, and then Martha Graham and Doris Humphrey.
I was thinking that as you were talking,
and they started it all, and now of course their offspring, Merce worked with Martha, and Jose Limon worked with Doris Humphrey. They are now they've come of age, but there really aren't now the woman I dearly love. Personal friend, Katie Litz, she has had a real struggle because she's an extraordinary talent, but she's had to do it on her own. She's gotten Guggenheims and things like that to keep going, but she's never been able to have the wherewithal to have a company, which she would really like to have. So here's a talent that really has never, and she's bitter about it too, at times. Very funny lady, but she's still bitter about it.
You wouldn't be. And you think it has to do with that she's a woman?
I don't know. Because she's an extraordinary talent.
I think it's harder being, you know, in that position and being a woman.
She's never had children, so she was really always Catherine Litt's dancer, choreographer. And she's had a real rough go. So it's...
Do you think this is a function of the fact that society in general has been treating women in this way, or do you think it's something unique in the field of art for her to have to fight even harder to break through this?
Well, that brings us back to something we were talking about earlier. The whole business of in the arts, the focusing is primary. When you have a job, a secretarial job or some kind of a professional job, any kind of a job, where you can go to your office or whatever, go to school, teach or do whatever, and come home, you might bring some of it home, but
you can switch off.
Yeah, you turn on and off. But when you're an artist, the creative need is there, and it's gunning you. It's there underneath your seat all the time.
Right.
And you can't turn it off.
You can't stop thinking about what you're doing.
And it's just painful not to be able to...
Thank God for Maslow, because when I read him, he said, now look, this creative urge that you have is as basic as eating and going to the bathroom and sleeping. I mean, it's just there, and it has to come out. And so don't kick yourself for, well, he didn't say that, I interpolate. Don't kick yourself for having it. Don't feel you have to put it under the carpet while you're vacuuming.
Yeah, but it's so frustrating when it, you know, you can't let it just flow and manifest itself the way you want it to, you know, and when you seem to have all these blocks in the way.
It's very often hard enough to keep it going, keep it flowing, even if you have nothing that stays in the way. But if you have a demanding husband, if you have demanding children, and all our kinds of duty, then it's really very, very hard to think of what you want to do.
And then you get into the guilt.
Then you
Does that ring a bell with anybody? Now, don't tell me that guilt isn't socially conditioned.
Well, the guilt is the worst, of course, because the guilt creates blocks, more and more blocks, which you can't translate into work.
Right.
And then you can't work. Even if you have the time and the opportunity, you can't work once you feel guilty.
Has anyone experienced, in relation to this guilt, the inner dialogue goes something like, I feel this frustration. I really want to be doing, something else. I really want to express myself, and yet here's the husband and here's the children, and I really, the other cultural line is, I should want to be with them. I should want to do this for them. I should love them. I should want to give my whole life to them. Yet this other thing on the other
side, what's wrong with me?
And then I get into the thing of what kind of a woman am I if this isn't enough? You know, is there something wrong with me as a woman? Is there something wrong with my femininity? And then I begin to really question it. That kind of a question is a very, very, there's something very bad about it. It can be a very destructive question. A very defeating question internally, if you really start turning in on yourself and asking that kind of a question about your own femininity, that can really be painful.
I didn't ask it quite that way, but with my first child, I was really worried that I wasn't a natural mother.
Oh, I knew I wasn't.
I thought, am I from another planet?
Well, let's take a station break, and then we'll be right back with a feminist perspective. Welcome back to A Feminist Perspective. I'm Linda Jones, Assistant Dean of Women at KU, and I'm moderating tonight's program, Women in Art. Our guests here with us are Peggy Baldwin, Staff Director from Hashinger Resident Theater and actress, Marcia Paladin, teacher and dancer, and Herta Galton, painter. We were talking about some of the concerns of being a mother and the role of a woman in society in trying to combine this with your art. I don't think that any of us have mentioned anything about the role that the men in your lives have played in this. Have they been helpful, or how has this been as a part of a function of your being both an artist and a woman? Marcia?
Well, it's nice to be able to have the opportunity to say thank you publicly to my husband, because he's really unusual, I think, in this respect. Right now, for example, I have time every day to go to the studio and work. And when I was doing that, even last year, 2 years ago, we both realized afterwards that there was still, when I leave home, there was still this unspoken, you really should be here with me and with the kids. And so I go and work, and as you say, Herta, how can you get that out of you when you're going to work and try to allow something to flow? But we worked through that, and it came out that was true. When he left for work, it was, see you, have a good day. But when I left, it was, you really should be here. And when we got that out in the open, now it's just, this is my time. And we share evening bedding down responsibilities and so on. And one evening even, I get to stay home and sew or read or do whatever I need to do. It isn't just, this is my time to go to the studio. I have one night at home when I don't have to take care of the family. And I can do other things that I like to do as well. So I'm very lucky. I'm very, very lucky. And I know it.
Do either of the other of you want to comment?
Well, I was at first encouraged, but my husband thought it would be nice for his wife to have a hobby. Uh-huh. He didn't think it would become such my life, really, and he couldn't stand it. And I think only a very secure man can stand it. I think this is where so much of the problems arise, because of the basic insecurity of men. Who can't stand that if women have something that is not connected necessarily with them.
And it's so compelling.
It's so compelling, right?
And I think in our particular area of commitment, that it is even more compelling than, say,
than a professional job.
I think it must be.
I was encouraged by my husband, but the encouraged to be interested and to do this and to pursue theater, even though I was taken, even though I left the professional arena, as it were. But I found that there was no facilitating done. In other words, if I did it, I had to direct a play in addition to everything else. And I found I was just trying to be superwoman, you know, and it was not fulfilling. I found that I was so completely exhausted and it took me several years to figure out why. And I then pulled completely in and did nothing, you know, for a year and didn't like the way that felt. And we've just arrived at a workable arrangement whereby he's really assuming a good portion of the responsibility of the home. Like, today is Monday and that's his day to stay home, and I do as much work on Mondays as I can along with evening work, but he does the washing and he drives the carpool for school and takes care of our youngest daughter, who's 3, and he does some cooking. He bakes better pies than I do now, and we also share some of the dishwashing and bedding down during the week, depending on what kind of a schedule we both have during the week. And it certainly has made it much easier for me to walk out and forget. In other words, it's yours. It's your day. I don't worry about it. It goes the way you want it to go or help it to go. And I think it's been really good for the girls, because they now when something goes wrong, they scream, "Mommy," and if that doesn't work, it's Daddy, you know, or sometimes the reverse, which I think is a very healthy sign for the children too. I think it's been very difficult on him, and it's helped me really to understand the plight of the man in all of this, because even though he gave a lot of intellectual assent to it, I found that I would come home on Mondays and we'd have fights when I got home where he'd be really angry, and it would take a while to find out what he was angry about, and it started to form a pattern, you know, and it was just very hard for him. He would call the basement the dungeon, because that's where the the washing machine and the dryer was, you know, and that he would spend a good part of his day down there. And it was very difficult for him. And I think he's adjusted to it a lot more. He's finding that there are really important things in it, but even when the intellectual assent is there, the emotional change, is a longer process to come by.
Something that was interesting for Phil was twice I've gone away for a week at a time to New York, and he's had full responsibilities. And he came back and he said, "Boy," well, and naturally, "do I ever appreciate you, you know, seeing what the responsibilities are." And at least for a month afterwards, it was really a sharing of many more responsibilities than we already do share now.
Mm-hmm. Peggy brought up a point about the effect on the children. You know, do you think that in your trying to work out some of these relationships and just problems of scheduling your priorities, do you think that this is going to have an effect on the way that your daughters will see themselves as they grow?
You mean their image of themselves as a woman?
Both as a woman and in relationship to the role of mother and father. Their own identity as well as the way they view you.
I think we can only speculate. I think it will have a definite effect on their image of themselves as a woman and what a woman can do, you know, in the world. I don't know what it'll do in terms of the father image. And I think it's really much too early to tell. Anybody have any feelings about that?
It only brings to my mind that I've asked Carrie, "What does your daddy do?" He goes to the university. And once in a while, when she answers the question about me that I wash dishes or something like that. But more often now, it's I go to the studio mm-hmm. and I go to dance.
And you kind of like that.
Yeah, I like it.
And I think it's important that children find that their mother is a human being too, and with are the responsibilities of a real human being, not mm-hmm. just the washing machine and the doormat for
and servant.
Right. And I think that that in later years children do appreciate that, and when they, once they understand it, it's in early years that you always want the mother to be around you. But later on, when a mother becomes a friend instead of just being a mother, I think it's very important that the mother has to give something else. It's also very important for the mother, apart from being an artist, to have something for herself, because life can be very lonely if you're alone. And your children leave you and you may not have a husband. And there has to be something that, that fills the place of all that. This is where so many women make the mistake of running their children's lives, because mm-hmm. they have nothing else to create in.
This may be an unfair question, but from where you are now in terms of your career as an artist as well as a wife, mother, do you think that if you had it to do again, you would do things a little differently and give yourself time sooner to develop
your
interests?
Yes, I certainly would have done many things differently. I would have married and I would have had children. I don't regret that. But yes, I would have started much earlier and have given the time for my work instead of my husband's work. Because I was much more involved with my husband's work than with myself. That was the important thing. That was the breadwinning thing. What I did was not important.
You were an extension of him
rather than
your own
individual
being.
Right. And because I didn't enjoy that 100%, I felt guilty for not being what I was expected to be. It's only these last few years that I found out that there are not many more things wrong with me than with other people. I thought I was the outcast.
You mentioned something about outcast. How do you feel that the role of a woman, is she an outcast in society? Is the artist the outcast? What about the combination?
Because I wonder whether women are not outcasts as artists and as women. I just wonder how our women feel, whether they feel as outcasts too, if they don't have the same feelings that their mother told them they ought to have.
Mm-hmm. About their role as
mother. About their role as mother and woman.
Mm. It's a little frightening, though, sometimes to ask those, you know, to feel those things and to articulate them. Then you're really on the edge of change. And some people, I think there's a tendency to block those kind of thoughts out.
You know, but it's very important to think about that. We take so much for granted that we were told. And we tell the same things our children. Without even thinking, haven't you found sometimes you tell your children exactly the same things your mother told you and you knew they were wrong and you can't help yourself and you
No, I try not to. And if I start, I stop and turn around and go back.
You may be more conscious of yourself than I was, but I found myself doing that all the time.
So you're saying that now you're making a conscious effort, that you're really trying to dispel some of those myths.
Oh, yes, constantly. Constantly.
How does this fit in to what you personally are trying to do with your creative talent as an artist? Are you attempting to dispel myths with that, or is that a side effect? How do you see it?
Well, I think in some ways that's true, because I think I've said before, I'm very committed to theater that has something to do with changing people's lives, mm-hmm. and therefore an experience that affects them enough to perhaps move, to create some inner movement. And for instance, I was going to do a feminist play this fall, and mm-hmm. and then changed my mind because I really felt like men were having a lot of difficulty too, and I wanted to focus on the relationship instead. But I would be very interested in hearing both of you articulate what your goals are. I would like to know that for myself.
I don't think I have a goal. I just want to paint. I just want to paint.
But yesterday you said to me, I asked you about your history and the movement of your paintings and all, and you said it seemed to you like you were still saying the same thing.
Oh, yes. I've always been saying the same thing.
I
want to express it better and better. This is my goal. I have no other goal.
But when I got into the car with Don and we got onto the conversation of your paintings, and he said, I wonder what it is she is trying to say. And I then wondered if it was something you could articulate. And then I thought, oh, no, I don't think I'd want you to.
No, I can't. But this is so many people ask me about my work and what you mean to say. Well, it has something to say. I hope it has something to say for everybody. And everybody should find his own feelings in my painting.
Or her own.
It doesn't matter who it is. But I paint as if I was dreaming. My painting comes out of my subconscious. And it is for him or her to translate it, not for me. I couldn't begin to tell you what I want to paint. Mm-hmm. It may mean something completely different to me than to somebody else. And that's all right.
Mm-hmm. I use my time at the studio, which is just a space to work, a quiet place to work, as a time to center, to come together. I could try to be poetic or use other people's words, to experience my organic unity, which are words I've used before. I like the word, opening the channel. The kind of thing that I do is an attempt to, it's very akin to many forms of meditation. Specifically, the kind of thing that's been developing in me has been developing from various sources for the past several years. And in effect, it's to open the channel and allow whatever energies or whatever will flow to flow, to tap the deeper inner source. And fortunately for me, it simply means becoming whole. Mm-hmm. And so that goal is very nice for living too. Mm-hmm. So I like the Balinese saying, we don't have any art, we do everything the best we can.
That is what you say is very beautiful, and I think it holds good for any kind of creativity. You just, there's unity of flowing. This is what we are doing.
And the awareness seems to move. I mean, it's as if it were part of a whole, because, you know, I find that the things I learn through my art or the insights or the depths that I reach feed back into my life, and it's as if you were creating yourself at the same time. And do you find, though, that patterns emerge from the centering process? I mean, by that, you spoke about going through phases, and now you were ready to reach a new stage, and I had a feeling that that might involve a new dance creation. It is,
but I can't even talk about it. I don't understand it. Uh-huh. It's just happening, mm-hmm. and so it's really, really would be difficult to talk about.
Mm. They say you shouldn't anyway, because you destroy part of the process when you articulate it. Mm-hmm.
I can say one other thing that is fortunate for me. one of my focuses is on the movement development that we all share from birth to 3 years and onward, but the prenatal life actually too, but from birth to 3 years is one of my primary points of focus. And so as a mother, especially with being able to thoroughly enjoy my second child, the watching and growing with that that development that occurs, the movement development is influencing my work. So I'm very fortunate that I'm able to blend mm-hmm. my art with watching my children grow. I have a piece that when Carrie was for Carrie, it was called First Year, and now it's second first year because I've had another chance to relook.
But isn't that what art really should be? It should be part of your life, and you should be able to integrate everything you experience and you live for. It's only when you feel that there are two parts of you, then you can't integrate, and then everything goes wrong. But if you use everything that's happening to you in your work and live your life as an artist as a whole, mm-hmm. then you'll be a unity, and then you can really create.
It's hard to even really think about separating being an artist from being a woman,
right.
or from being
yeah.
me as a person. It's all just kind of wrapped up in one.
And it should be one, and you can only function as one.
But it does get splintered sometimes,
it
and that's when it's
not.
Difficult.
Yeah,
no, I agree with you in terms
it
of
should
the show.
Not. It should be possible to completely unite the two beings.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what, from what you three have said, that this is the way you view yourselves, that you've been working towards that. You know, that you bring different experiences from being a woman and from being a person in relation to your husbands, to your children, but yet it's all tied up in this one feeling of being an artistic entity.
Mm-hmm. That's well expressed.
That
is, as I see it from what you've said, this is where you are. And, you know, to me it's a very exciting process, because I think that from articulating some of the things that we have heard tonight, that you've not only shared something of yourselves with each other, but that I've just seen, you know, like you said, this glint in the eye of sharing similar experiences that perhaps you were not aware other women had been having, or other artists, or whatever the combination mm-hmm. may be. You know, do you
yes,
feel this
yes,
way?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. It's been fun and valuable.
Refreshing.
Yeah. Yes. yes.
That concludes our discussion this evening on Women in Art, a part of A Feminist Perspective, sponsored by the Women's Resource and Career Planning Center of the Dean of Women's Office in Strong Hall. I'd like to tell you a little bit about the show for next week, Christmas night. The topic will be Women in Religion. On the panel will be Deanne Mesgar, who is a woman seminary student, Mary Beth Kelly, a religious sister, a local campus minister, Otto Zing, and also Dan Crary, who comes from a fundamentalist training of a Southern Baptist minister. We hope that you will tune in next week and be with us as we discuss women in religion.